Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And every Wednesday evening, we're joined by Tom. I'm looking forward to this conversation as the impeachment hearings are underway as we are recording this portion of the program. And yes, it has been recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule in light of the fact that he's in London, England, some 5 hours ahead of us. By now, as a matter of fact, as I'm talking to him, he probably knows all the details of today's hearing while it is underway here. He's obviously got all the information since he's some 5 hours ahead of us. Well, not quite, in light of the fact that it is taking place as we speak. Tom, good afternoon to you. Soon to be good evening to you.
Good afternoon, evening to you, Lockwood.
And first question always of interest, what's the weather like in London?
Very, very wet. Up in the north, we've got very serious flooding. And because we're in the middle of an election, it's become an election issue. Today, the Prime Minister Boris Johnson was up in the north touring the flood damage and being shouted at for not doing enough soon enough.
That's similar to an interesting development in Venice, as a matter of fact. Apparently,
the worst flooding in Venice in 70 years.
Okay, I saw 50 years, but well, it's 20 years between friends, right? Yeah, 70 years, and it's significant flooding. What was impressive about that story was it happened with a great deal of surprise. I'm quite frankly a little surprised that they were surprised by it.
Well, you know, sometimes these things just come out of nowhere. And you know, you can't say with any certainty that X amount of inches of rain is going to fall from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of Venice, they normally have flooding to coincide with the spring tide.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't usually have it in November, December. They don't have these high tides then. So it doesn't augur well for the spring.
Well, no, it does not augur well for the spring. But this issue of flooding, of course, is a major problem, and we're seeing this around the world. And we don't have to get into the issue of climate change, but we do recognize there is sea level rise, and it's been rising now for thousands of years. Just seems to have accelerated. But moving on to other issues, since I did open the conversation with this appointment of the impeachment hearings, and the issue of the whistleblower and all that's taking place. First question, as we are recording this program, as the hearings are underway, I'm curious, are they being televised there or are they available there in the BBC and other forms of communications? What's happening live?
They're not on the BBC, but we do get CNN.
Uh-huh.
We don't get Vox. Vox is banned here. Fox.
Really?
I should say it's banned here because it's not regarded as a news channel.
Really?
That's right. Yes, doesn't have enough news content in it according to the Ofcom regulator, which regulates which channels are allowed to broadcast news. Doesn't have enough news content in it to allow it to be on the news channel, and so they don't put it up.
Okay, then that explains, Tom, why we at times, many in the audience, get very frustrated with you. You don't have all the details. Okay, now we understand.
No, I can't get Fox News.
Oh, how about that? Okay. Well, you should be listening to the talk station on a regular basis because we are a Fox News affiliate. So continue on. The impeachment, is it a high dudgeon there?
We have our own problems. And, you know, when we are not in the middle of something like an election campaign, which mm-hmm. we are, and we're only about 4 weeks away now from the actual voting, then we're absolutely fascinated by things like the impeachment in the United States. Trump is huge entertainment.
Well,
if nothing else.
That's true. I would agree with that. What about the issue related to the whistleblower and the identity thereof? And of course, and I'm confident you've been covering, I say you, the European press have been covering the affairs
yes.
of the state here in the country.
A number of people have commented that, you know, the whistleblower's identity has almost become redundant because so many other people have confirmed what he said. who weren't whistleblowers. He started it off, but, you know, it's been confirmed by almost everyone who's testified.
Right.
And so, you know, is his identity that important?
That is a good question. And of course, it just initiated the activities. Then, following that, and let's talk about this in relationship to the entire family. Donald Trump Jr., you have a note here on Arlington, but also the fact that he has written a book and the fact that he is in the process of trying on the hustings and was shouted down at some of the
it really did make big news. His comment about and it came to, you know, at Memorial Day, that's when it was printed over here. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And it came at Remembrance Day, you know, which is the same thing. We discussed this last week. When he wrote in his book that he was riding through Arlington National Cemetery, and it simply occurred to him out of the blue of all the sacrifices that his family have made to the United States in business and things like that, and how similar they were to the sacrifices that were made to the people who gave up their lives for the country. And the columnists here just went wild. I suppose they did in the States too. You know, there is no comparison.
Well, no, the other aspect of it, many just ignored it, but that is interesting though, related to that remark.
It was not ignored over on this side of the Atlantic.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk about this. Obviously, there is continued among the media there in the European press, there is still this continued angst, if you will, with the President of the United States?
Angst? Well, that's an understatement, I think.
Really?
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, he is heartily disliked. And it's become a big election issue over here. You know, a lot of people will not be voting conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Or they won't be voting for the Brexit Party because they think those two parties are, if you like, poodles of Donald Trump.
Wow.
Because they've been endorsed by Trump, they wouldn't dream of voting for them.
My goodness. Okay. Certainly. Okay. We're going to get into the elections there in a moment. The other question, of course, has to do with the continued issue of the impeachment. And I'm wondering, what impact has this had relative to the observation and or opinions about U.S. diplomacy? Is there any question now as a result of that?
No.
Okay.
No. Other than the fact that people are very concerned about the and they've always been concerned about the high number of political appointments within the State Department.
Uh-huh.
That's always been a concern among Europeans.
The other question, though, of course, goes to the sense of trust in the State Department and the willingness on the part of other ambassadors to work with the U.S. Do you think that has been impinged in any way or challenged?
I don't believe so. I can see where you're coming from, but I don't think so.
Okay. This is one of the concerns that some have expressed in the fact that we may be losing our sense of accountability or, if you will, support and, respect. And I'm just curious because of this debate. But it is basically separated.
I don't think it's because of this debate. I think it's because of the general direction of American foreign policy at the moment that it's and we'll be getting into this as well, the unilateralism, the lack of coordination, things like that.
Okay. We will get into that in just a moment because I know we're going to bring up the topic of NATO as well in a few moments with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this evening here on Viewpoints Around the World. Yes, this portion has been pre-recorded because of the late hour that which it will be airing. It'll be almost 11 p.m. or past 11 p.m. when it goes live here on the talk station. Again, you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as we have mentioned several times, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Tom is joining us from London, England. And Tom, since we did discuss this right at the opening of the conversation, the elections, let's talk about this. There are several items here of note, and I'm curious as to the elections there in the UK. I want to get back to elections here in the United States as well, but first let's go to the elections there in the UK, because it does bring up one, you've got one name on here that will apply later on, that's Hillary Clinton. But what's happening there in the UK with the elections?
Well, one of the more interesting things, I think, from your point of view, is we have our own Russian interference scandal.
Ah.
Which is what has dragged Hillary Clinton into this, because I think Ms. Clinton is absolutely convinced still that there was collusion. And there was a report, or there is a report, that has been produced by British intelligence. And it basically says more or less the same thing that the report, the Mueller report, said into said about Russian interference in American elections. And that is that the Russians have interfered in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the report is alleged to name names, including some very prominent Conservative Party names. And this is an allegation. That's all I can say. It's only an allegation, to have named names, and that, Russian money has gone into the Conservative Party coffers. That's all an allegation,
mm-hmm.
I should stress. Now, the reason it's only an allegation is because although the report has been cleared for publication by the intelligence people, it's been cleared for publication by the relevant House of Commons committee, the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, is refusing to allow it to be published.
All right, now let me
the election.
Let me interrupt on that one and make note of this. Boris Johnson is head of the Conservative Party, is he not?
That's right.
Ah, just a connection. Okay.
and of course, you know, that is, you know, people are up in arms. You know, I mean, you know, why are you hiding this information when, you know, it's you know. And the obvious conclusion to be drawn is he's hiding it because it has information detrimental to himself.
Right.
But it's only an allegation, and we can only draw that supposition, which everyone appears to be drawing. It really is hurting him in a big way.
Okay. By the way, you mentioned, was it Boris Johnson that was in Scotland recently, or was it,
No, it was
Jeremy,
the opposition leader. I mean, things are just, they are so divided now.
Mm-hmm.
Boris Johnson was, we had this flooding, and he's had a big problem. He didn't get up there fast enough to look at the flooded homes. And so when he did get up there, he met angry crowds of people saying, why weren't you here earlier?
Mm-hmm.
This is just proof that you're not interested in us.
All right.
There's always been this feeling of that the North is ignored by the people in the southeast around London.
Well,
the metropolitan elite, if you like.
Yeah, you know, it's
of course the North is much poorer than the southern part of the country.
No, I look at London and England as I do Atlanta and Georgia. And that is, there's Atlanta and then there's the rest of Georgia. There's London, and then there's the rest of England. So I understand the frustration that folks may experience there in England. Well, the other aspect, and I want to touch on this because you mentioned it off air a few minutes ago, was it then Jeremy Corbyn that was in Scotland?
And he has a strong history of connections with and sympathy with jihadist groups,
uh-huh.
and terrorist groups. And he was in Scotland. And he was wearing a tartan tie. A Scottish plaid tie.
Right.
And someone thought it was a jihadist plaid tie and attacked him on those grounds. Which just, I mean, they couldn't tell. It just goes to show that people are seeing only what they want to see.
Yeah, I agree fully. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Lookahead Radio with us. Tartan, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, are indications of the various Scottish clans, and they're very proud of their tartans. And I'm a little stunned by that story, but just to your point, it's what people want to see or have sort of embedded in their minds. You've got a note here. Hillary and Trump both involved in the UK elections. How so?
Well, simply Hillary's gotten involved by demanding publication of this Russia report.
Uh-huh.
She's saying it's absolutely awful. That it hasn't been, and a disgrace that it hasn't been reported. She's demanding that it be published.
Uh-huh.
Trump has gotten involved by calling on the Brexit Party, led by Nigel Farage, and Boris Johnson, the Conservative Party, to merge forces, and saying that they should get together, and if they were, they were an unstoppable force. And a lot of people say that what's happened this week, very important, is that Nigel Farage and the Brexit Party has unilaterally pulled out of seats where they were likely to be challenging the Conservatives or a threat to the Conservative Party. And some people say this is a result of direct pressure from President Trump.
Hmm. All right. So we haven't really touched on the issue of Brexit because we're talking about the election for the prime minister, but and who will lead the country. What is happening with Brexit? We've been talking about it now for years, every day, and until just now, it hasn't even entered the conversation. So what is the issue with Brexit?
Well, Brexit is on hold during the election because that is the underlying reason for the election. I mean, the fact is that Parliament was totally deadlocked over Brexit, and so they had to call an election to try and break the deadlock.
Uh-huh.
And so it's basically on hold. As I said, it's the underlying reason, but a lot of other complementary subjects have come up, such as the future of the National Health Service, such as Corbyn's links with terrorism, such as the Russia report, and things like that, which are all affecting Brexit because they're affecting the election, which is said to be the most important that this country's had since World War II.
And when will the election be conducted?
December the 12th.
Okay. And is this going to have a significant turnout? Now, of course, this will be a conversation we're going to have many times here between now and that date.
Yeah.
But
that is another bone of contention. A lot of people think it won't for lots of reasons. One, because a lot of people think that December's a bad time to have an election. It's cold, it's wet, it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to leave their homes to go out and vote. They do have postal votes, but, there's still a lot of people who tramp down to the polling station. And the other reason is that a lot of people are just fed up with politics. They're fed up with Brexit, and they just, they don't want to vote. They don't like either party. Neither Jeremy Corbyn nor Boris Johnson are considered popular leaders. They're both heartily disliked, but they are the leaders of the two main parties. And so, a lot of people will, instead of making a choice, will just not make a choice at all.
Wow.
I think.
All right. And by the way, related to this election, the voters are voting on the parties, not the leaders of those parties. Am I correct on that?
They do not. They vote on an individual member of parliament in their constituency.
Mm-hmm.
And you do not have a vote for the leader of the party.
Okay.
They vote on the individual members of, an individual in their constituency. The party with the most number of seats then becomes the government, and the leader of that party becomes the prime minister.
Okay, you said earlier Nigel Farage had backed away. Is there a possibility that, in fact, Mr. Farage and Boris Johnson have come to an agreement?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Boris Johnson knows that if he comes to an agreement with the Brexit Party, it would destroy the Conservative Party.
Okay.
It just would.
Really? Yet they both have the same focus. That is, at least I'm understanding.
Only on Brexit.
Excuse me?
Only on Brexit.
Only on Brexit. All right. You've got a note here, a bidding war. What do you mean by that?
Well, basically, all three parties, the Liberal Democrats, actually, who, the third party, are actually doing much better than anticipated,
mm-hmm.
Partly because of the dislike of the two main parties. And all three parties now are just throwing money at problems. They're promising billions and billions and billions of dollars for all sorts of things. You know, we even got to the stage where one person said, I will spend 10 billion pounds fighting knife crime. The other one said, no, I'll spend 12.
You know, okay.
It sounds like a bidding war.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Typical politics. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us.
The problem is it's a bit transparent.
That is a good thing that it is transparent. Here it seems to be rather quietly done. So at least the public is aware of that. Tom, we're going to take a quick break. I want to come back. I want to touch on one other issue related to elections and, of course, the U.S. elections. Curious how they're being covered there in the European press. But we'll talk then also about events there in Europe. A particular note here has to do with the issue of Jewish products and the labels required on that. And, of course, we've got to get to the EU and West Bank wine issue as well. All that more here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, before we get to other items in the European community, I want to go back to elections, and we'll talk about other elections as well, Spanish elections. But we've been paying close attention now, of course, to the Democrat efforts to identify a candidate. And there's been a lot of discussion recently about the addition of Hillary Clinton as a potential candidate. And you've got a note here on Michael Bloomberg, who's also likewise expressed interest in being a candidate for the Democrat nomination. So what coverage is that getting, and what kind of interest is that proving?
It's getting good coverage. You know,
really?
I mean, Bloomberg, if Bloomberg enters it, they're talking about, you know, the billionaires race, you know, uh-huh. One billionaire against another billionaire, both New Yorkers, that sort of thing. One Democrat, one Republican. So, you know, that's getting a lot of interest. A lot of people think he was a reasonable mayor of New York. Hillary is getting a lot of interest. They think it would be a mistake for Hillary to get involved.
Why?
That she has emerged from the last election and is still a too divisive a figure. And that will not help the Democratic Party. And it won't help Hillary Clinton, and it won't help American politics. She's had her last hurrah and probably should bow out gracefully.
Wow, is that the overall opinion there in the European community? I'm surprised.
Yes, I think so. You know, I mean, a lot of people like Hillary. They just think that after the last election, she emerged as too divisive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The other interesting thing related to the campaigns, of course, we're beginning to see now the a reduction in the candidates because of finally commitment to parties and to the voters is not happening as quickly as anticipated. And of course, there's so much news now about the impeachment that pretty much is overwhelming the candidates. I'm curious, is there still opinion of the front runners there in the European community as to who the candidates are in the Democrat process?
Well, probably Elizabeth Warren.
Okay.
But coming up fast is that young mayor, Paul Buttigieg.
Peter Buttigieg. Yeah.
Peter Buttigieg. I never can get
that's
his name right.
Well, it's
He's an interesting character.
Oh, that's an understatement. All right. Just curious about that. Let's move on to other items. I want to get to Emmanuel Macron and his comments about the future of Europe and NATO. This is a big issue. Well, what's happening there?
Well, Macron gave an interview to The Economist magazine,
mm-hmm.
In which he said that NATO was brain dead.
Wow.
Now, what he meant by that was it lacked a brain, because we weren't getting the help from the United States or from the Trump administration,
mm-hmm.
Which previous administrations have supplied, that he was particularly concerned that there was absolutely no coordination, there was no conversation, there were no strategic conversations, that the United States had not bothered to consult with its allies when it withdrew from Syria. It did not bother to consult with its allies when it broke off negotiations with the Taliban or reduced troop levels in Afghanistan or anywhere else. It has become unilateralist. And that if that's the case, what's the point, Macron would say, of NATO?
So now there's been some...
An alliance is an alliance not of just one person or mm-hmm. one country telling every other member of the alliance what to do, but it should be an alliance of all the countries.
Now, let's stick with this for a moment. There was discussion at one point about creating a European military organization.
First of all, I think that discussion, that is what Macron is getting at. That's
okay.
What's behind all this for Macron. And it has been behind successive French administrations for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of Charles de Gaulle's dreams, Pompidou's dream, and so forth. The fact is that the French have nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is the French have a good military structure. They have troops overseas. They have, you know, they're good. They're good at fighting, if you like.
Uh-huh.
And they would like to be the leaders of Europe.
No.
And they can't do it economically.
Okay.
The Germans are better at the economics. They're better at organizing finance and things like that. But the Germans do not want to be a military power again. They're frightened of being a military
right,
power.
Right.
Which is why they favor closer relations with the United States.
Mm-hmm.
They want to have good relations with France, but they don't want to have good relations with France at the expense of France being the major military power in Europe. Macron sees this as an opportunity to be the leader in Europe by pushing for a European defense force, which he knows France would dominate.
Okay.
Especially if Britain withdraws from the EU.
Or I was wondering where the UK would play a role in that, and you don't see that if the UK pulls away from
it would be peripheral because
okay.
it would not be in the EU.
All right. I just was curious about that. Real quick question on this. NATO is seen then from the European perspective as a purely U.S. arm.
No. Well, no, that. that is the exact opposite of what they see it as.
Okay.
That is the exact opposite. They see it as an alliance-wide arm.
Okay.
Which needs the nuclear umbrella and support of the United States.
All right.
But if it was seen as simply an American arm, then that would be detrimental to Europe. They don't want to just be nothing more than a tool of American defense and foreign policy. They want to be part of American defense and foreign policy.
All right. It's just, it seems in your initial conversation with the fact that the U.S. had initiated unilateral decisions that it was perceived that that was a part of NATO. I was misunderstanding. Okay.
No.
All right. Thank you very much. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us. Tom, let's talk about another item here, paying close attention to what's going on in the Middle East. And I was stunned by a story that appeared recently related to Israel and a decision by the European Court of Justice that would clearly requires Israeli products to be labeled. And my question to you is, interestingly enough, is this a requirement for other countries, or is this specifically aimed at Israel? And if so, what does that portray for
it's,
the...
It's not aimed at Israel.
Okay.
It's aimed at the West Bank.
Okay.
And that is what the European Court of Justice has said, that products from the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason is because they do not recognize Israeli sovereignty over the West Bank, where there are 700,000 settlers.
Mm-hmm.
The EU does not recognize that. And so this is very much a political decision, I think. And what they're saying is, you know, if you're going to sell things from the West Bank, and in this case, I think it was primarily wine, but there are other food products as well, it should be labeled, because we as Europeans do not approve of the settlement of the West Bank. We do approve of the two-state solution, and you can't really have a two-state solution unless you agree that those 700,000 settlers don't stay on the West Bank. And you know, as part of our disapproval, we're going to say, look, these products are coming from the West Bank, which we don't approve of.
So now, sounds to me like an economic potential of an economic boycott.
No, it's not a boycott, because they're not saying that they won't buy them. They're saying, you know, you can sell them to us. We'll buy them, but we'd like to know where they're coming from, because, you know, it's a bit like saying I want to buy my only organic food in a way.
I disagree with you on that. When it's setting this up for the potential of an economic boycott. And the other question that's related to this is the numerous instances of Chinese goods that are created and by basically slave labor. And I'm wondering, is there some potential interest in the European community to address that issue in China? In light of
I have not seen that issue raised, but you're right. It could come up. If things are, slave labor is used all, you know, it's used in South
right.
Asia as well.
Yes, it is.
That could become an issue. You're right. It could be extrapolated to incorporate the slave labor issue. The other thing is, I think it raises the issue of anti-Semitism.
Right.
And the way that some people conflate anti-Israeli with anti-Semitism, that if you do not support mm-hmm. The policies of the Israeli government, you are anti-Semitic. That is becoming a big issue over here. They find it very difficult to draw the dividing line between the two. And, of course, the Israeli government is doing everything they can to link anti-Semitism to anti-Israeli.
But we've been seeing stories, and I won't get into the details on this one, Tom, because we hadn't prepared to talk about this, or do we have the time, but we've been reading stories here in the States that, in fact, anti-Semitism has been a growing issue, particularly in the continental European communities, France being one of them, and Germany, but there is
yes,
some...
And it is. There's no doubt about it.
Hmm.
It is, and we read stories here about anti-Semitism being a growing issue in the U.S.
No, that is,
you know, anti-Semitism as a whole is definitely on the rise.
You're going to have to share with me some indications or stories where it's growing. It seems to be on the rise in the U.S. I'm paying close attention to the news here, and I just do not see it. And again,
I think there was a attack on a Pittsburgh synagogue or cemetery, cemetery.
Yes. But then again, one would wonder if that was really anti-Semitism or, again, one of these issues of mental illness. But
you can argue about these people are violent anything, whether or not they're mentally ill.
Well,
I would argue that they probably are.
Well, they are. But the difference here is this issue of the new decision by the European Court. Just a little discomforting. Let's move on to a topic here before we go to the break. The Spanish election results. And Spain is, it's a conflict as a country, as you've shared with us on numerous occasions. What is the outcome of the Spanish elections?
Well, the big outcome, first of all, it's another deadlock.
Uh-huh.
So they're going to have difficulty forming a government. But the far-right party, Vox, has substantially increased their share of the vote, and their membership in Parliament. They now have 53 seats in Parliament and are the third largest party. They are, there's several things. They're very xenophobic. They're very anti-immigrant. And they are very anti-independence for the provinces, especially Catalonia.
Exactly.
They want to come down really hard on Catalonia. They want to impose direct rules, send in the troops, and everything else, impose curfews.
You know, many of us here in the States do not, and I'll lay claim to this, not being fully aware of the conflicts in Spain, but Spain has major divisions within the country, both in both cultural and almost in language, do they not? And Catalonia
is they do. Yeah, I mean, long-running problems in the Basque country, for instance, where they had this terrorist group called ETA.
Right.
And now they're having problems in Catalonia, which is where Barcelona, basically the country's major port city is located.
Well, this fascinating story, and we'll be paying close attention to this. Real quickly, as we wrap it up for the next break, does this have potential for increasing conflicts maybe in the European community as well?
Well, it could spread out because you know, I think the success of Vox is certainly disheartening for the centrist and the left wing.
Okay.
They the leader of the Vox party got congratulatory telegrams from the Alternative for Deutschland in Germany, from Nigel Farage in the UK, from Geert Wilders, who's the leader of the far right in Holland, and from Marie Le Pen, who's the leader of the far right in France. And so anything, you know, this coordination between the spectrums of the political party, cooperation across the political spectrum is sometimes disconcerting.
Okay, that's a topic we're going to talk about at a later date. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're going to come up to a topic I'm looking forward to, living funerals. This is always the top of the program, which happens to be at the end. We always save the best for last. But Tom, before we get to the issue of living funerals, Hong Kong schools suspended. The conflicts in Hong Kong are ramping up. Is there concern in the European community about that?
There's terrible concern about it. But they think the Chinese are probably handling it right. You know, they're just riding out the storm. Yes, there have been shootings. Yes, there have been riots, more riots. In a way, I think in some ways the rioters may be trying to provoke the police and the Chinese authorities into doing something. The latest move is, in fact, to, as you said, to suspend the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, when we talk about people who riot and demonstrate, it's quite often the young people who are right up there in the front line. And so they have decided that they're going to clamp down on the young people by suspending schools.
All right.
I think this could be counterproductive in a way, because if you suspend the schools, they're not going to be in the classrooms.
Right.
They have an excuse to be out on
exactly.
the streets.
Exactly. You know,
that may backfire.
That's a very astute observation. All right. And then let's wrap it up with living funerals. I think I saw this story. This is interesting. Let's hear about this.
Well, living funerals. Yeah. This is in South Korea. There's something called the Hee-won Living Center, and it's been going since 2012. And since then, they've had 25,000 living funerals. And what they do is they dress you up in your funeral shroud.
Mm-hmm.
They have you write out your last will and testament. They take photographs of you as if you were dead. And then you lie down in the coffin.
Uh-huh.
and you just lie there. And they do everything except nail the lid shut. The idea is that by simulating your death, you focus on your life.
Okay, that's not a bad concept. I just the process is a little
a bit macabre.
Macabre. Yeah, I was going to use that word. And if we're a living funeral, I thought that would be a good phrase on that. All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and look at, when can we attend your living funeral?
Well, I don't know, but I do take the view that practice makes perfect, so.
Okay. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, as always, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints around the world, again, with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.